time on graphs in quantum field theory. And I'm going to keep the level quite low, also because I just learned this week. Right? So I may not be able to answer many of the more specific questions, but I'll do my best. Right? So I want everyone to keep in mind a Lagrangian when I'm doing this. That will be the simple phi cube theory, either in d equals 4 or 6. In d equals 6, I'll talk about this later. So we have a usual net term and some phi cube interaction and some mass. For 6 dimensions, then this term will be marginal, and 4 dimensions, it's not really well defined non-perturbatively, but we won't care about it because we're doing perturbation theory. Right? So when we're doing perturbation theory, we have a calculation tool that helps us to organize perturbation theory, that is the Feynman graphs. What are the Feynman graphs? Well, for Feynman graphs is just a way to encode the perturbation theory. In the case of phi cube, we have graphs that are just going to be propagators, that are usually given by our kinetic term, and graphs that are given by interactions, that is given by the phi cube term. At the classical level, we only get, on our perturbation theory, we have to sum graphs that are trees. We don't have any loops. That's if I'm doing classical perturbation theory to solve this, to solve the equation of motion for this theory. But when I go to quantum theory, then I start to have more interesting stuff that are going to be the loops. That's where all the fun starts, actually. And usually you can also organize this expansion by loops in powers of h bar. It's a nice way to do it. Because to each h bar, we associate one loop. Let's do like this. To the n will be an n loop amplitude. And h bar will tell you how much quantum the system is, which level we're going. Right? So we can have also more complicated things like going to one loop, and then I have another loop, and then you can have more loops. Whichever kind of graphs you can get by just putting together these two kind of graphs, right? Now, if I have some graph, some Feynman graph, it's useful to separate into what we call the one-particle irreducible parts. What are one-particle irreducible parts? For example, I can have graphs that are something like this. And this will not be one particle reducible because if I cut it here, it will fall down into two graphs, two point functions. By themselves, they are well defined, right? They are nice. So this is not one particle reducible. But if I only consider this, then this is one particle irreducible. Actually, two point function, one particle irreducible. And I can have also three particle irreducible diagrams. I'm going in. This is like three point functions, but three particles scattering also is one particle irreducible. So in general, I can have a Feynman graph that will come and have bubbles that are going to be called 1 PI. Then I have legs that will go out to other 1 PIs. And that's just a nice way to organize my perturbation theory, right?
So it's always going to be a tree in the bubble?
That's a good question. I think it's always going to be a tree. Yes, I think so. I'm not sure, but I do think it's always going to be a tree. Or at least you can organize in such a way it's always going to be a tree.
Because
if you have one particle reducible, one particle reducible, one particle reducible, and you do something like this, then I can't cut it. Right. So actually, this will be one particle reducible. Can you answer it?
Hey.
That I don't think that will really work because I'll have to stay close to the computer all the time.
You cannot hear Eduardo properly?
No, we can hear you, but it's really bad sound quality. You can't understand.
Okay, so Jacob, do you know why that may be?
Jacob, do you know why the people in Brussels can't really hear? It might just be the internet connection, there's something wrong.
I'll go get someone to check.
Okay, thank you. Well, I'm just going to try to go, keep going, and be more eloquent than I speak. Okay. And now, when we get to loops, we also have divergences in general, right? And that's why. And the whole thing about renormalization is how to get rid of these divergences in the loops, right? So, for example, this one particle reducible. If I'm doing this moment in space in six dimensions, for example, then I have like this. So this diagram will actually diverge linearly. Not linearly, this will be proportional to some polynomial on the external momentum. Right? So this you can see that because we have a loop and I have an integration of the momenta that is running inside this loop, I have some divergence. And the whole deal about renormalization is to get rid of those divergences. So there is something that we call, if I label a graph, say, so gamma is a graph, there is what we call the superficial degree of divergence. It's going to be omega of gamma. And this is basically, if this is zero, then we have a log, something like this. Zero will imply a log divergence. So something that is of this one. And if I have negative, so anything that is less than zero. Then no divergence. And anything that is bigger than zero, then it diverges, usually as a polynomial. And that's just a way to encode superficial. It's called superficial because it's not really useful for more loops. It's accurate only for one loop. So let's say accurate. One loop, but it actually ends up being very useful for multi-loops because the algorithm that I'm going to describe later, it's recursive on one loop divergence amplitudes. Right. Yes.
Hi. We've got a question.
Yeah. No, I think in general it's going to be, at least if you have a usual quantum field theory, it's going to be polynomial divergence. I can't think anything that's going to give you exponential divergence, at least not in usual field theories. It's because,
thank you.
No problem. Maybe something weird in two dimensions, but no, probably not. Also, it's exponential divergence is very, very divergent. I don't even think you can renormalize that. But
and those things are given by the powers of the dimensions.
Yeah,
that we get.
Yeah, it's basically that. So it shouldn't be. Yes. So how do I just calculate for one loop? So I just do to see what is the degree. I just see how the amplitude scales. The amplitude is going to be an integral of the momenta, so some dimension, the internal momenta of some function of the momenta, and I just see how this function scales when I do scaling of momenta. And so if it scales, for example, this has this integral dp over p. If I do scaling, I only have dp over dp. So it doesn't scale. So that's zero for the scaling degrees. And so you can see that if I have positive powers, then it will diverge. If I have negative powers, then it will. It's not a problem. Right. So there is for one loop there is an for one loop there is a nice algorithm given by Bogolyubov. That's Bogolyubov subtraction scheme. That it works for any renormalization scheme. So this is for one loop, but it is generalized later for multi-loops. So I'm scattering a, let's say an amplitude. Depends always on the final graph and on the external momenta, where this is actually a set of vectors giving my, the external momenta that are coming inside the graph. And it's I will always write for one loop. Is going to be the integral of some rational function of the momentum. Where Q. So P is the standard momentum and Q is the momentum that is running inside the loop, whatever is the kind of diagram that I have. Okay. So what is the subtraction scheme? Well, the renormalized amplitude will be written as just my usual divergent amplitude minus, and I will explain in a moment what is this T operator. This T operator is nothing else than give you the Taylor expansion of this. As a y. It gives a Taylor expansion of this amplitude to the power of up to the power of the divergence and evaluated at zero. The external momentum equals zero. This is not. Well, if you change the pointer you're evaluating, you just get an overall constant, which we don't care much about. Right. And the thing is that this amplitude using this is going to be finite. So it's interesting that. So this is basically like I have my amplitude, and this will basically give my counter terms. So formally, yes, formally this is infinite. This is infinite. We're taking two infinites and getting something finite, but that's the way things are. Right? So I can see that this applied to this rational function it's going to be organized as something like this. Yes?
Sorry, the camera, if you're not going high enough or you're writing too high to the camera, you need to write lower or ask the camera to film what you're writing.
Yes, Jacob, can I get the camera up here to see what I'm writing? Okay, so. Schematically, I can see this term as being just I'm subtracting the divergences that are organized in counter terms. So this works nice for one loop. Can we see how it works? Yes, we can see how it works nicely for one loop. Montes, can you keep track of the time and don't let me go over? Ah, there's a clock over there. Okay. So back to our two-point irreducible, one partially reducible two-point function. Now, Q is the momentum that is running inside the loop. E is the external momentum coming from the outside. Right.
I'm sorry, what do you mean by P? That expansion in P, what? Yeah, but P is a vector, so.
Yes, but there are vector indices hidden down inside that.
Okay.
Because you are going to differentiate, it's a Taylor expansion, right? So you're going to differentiate the rational function with respect to the momenta. So you get vector indices on that, and then you contract with the P. All
right.
And like, that's schematic.
And then you get a bunch of tensors.
Yes, a bunch of tensors. I'll contract it. Where was I? Yes, so this is formally, well, if I calculate the degree of the superficial degree of divergence of this graph, I get zero. Can it be easily seen? Because here I have power 2, 2, 4, so it should be zero. And so, which implies there is a log divergence in this graph. So we have to regularize it. Well, so we can calculate using that. You can calculate. We know that you only have to. We don't actually have to do a full Taylor expansion for that. We only need the first term, and the first term is going to be the first counter term. It's just going to be the integral. It's just going to be our function evaluated. So you just integrate my rational function, but evaluated at p equals 0. Right? And you see that this is also divergence, but the type of divergence that this has is a log divergence, which is the same as the original. So that's why I just need another log to cancel the log divergence on that in order to get a renormalized amplitude. This you can do with one line of algebra. you get just this expression, and you can see that this expression, when I take my loop momentum to be very, very high, it's going to be just squared. So it behaves, for high momentum, behaves like this, which is finite. So we're there. But that's only for one loop, right? This classification, this the superficial degree of divergence, it fails for higher loop amplitudes.
Excuse me, can you write a title for all of this? This is the Bobolivo.
Yes. I do have to see how to spell it, the name of the guy.
Just write Bobolivo.
Bobolivo.
B-O-G-O.
This is,
it sounds.
I can do it.
You will write in Portuguese.
It's very phonetically.
It's box. Subtraction. It's a nice name. Bobolivov subtraction. Skip. Right? That's for one loop. But that fails for mutual loop, as I'm trying to get to. For example, if I have a Feynman graph, which is this, you can check, has a degree of divergence -4. So you think, well, fine. Not really, because if you look at the subgraphs in particular, this subgraph, we just saw that it has a degree of divergence, superficial degree of divergence, 0. So again, I have a log divergence that is hidden inside. So this actually breaks down for higher loops. So when I go to, but that's not much of a problem, because for many loops, for many loops, for multiple loops, there is what is called the BPHZ algorithm. Which is a recursive algorithm that is built upon the Bobolivov subtraction scheme, where we will look at each one loop divergence, and we'll start with a big graph and look at each of subloop divergence that is only one loop, and regularize that and do an iterative scheme to get that. So now I'm going to write a bunch of formulas on the blackboard and ask you to take it by faith that it was proved that it always gives a finite result. So, again, I have my renormalized amplitude. Yes.
Sorry, what BPHZ stands for? Is it important?
Bogolyubov, the other guy, and the other guy that came up with this, which I forgot, and I can look it up if you.
Oh, that's okay.
That is Zimmerman.
Yeah,
that's... Zimmerman. Yes, yes. This is Zimmerman, because they came up with the scheme, and who proved the whole deal was Zimmerman. Not long ago, actually. Thank you, anyone. So here I have several internal momenta, loop momenta, up to L loops, let's say. Again, I have my rational function that I'm going to define in just a second. Again, this notation is to refer to all this momentum, all taken together, minus, again, our Taylor expansion, apply some function, So now there is no confusion. Where this is, let's call it a prepared integrand. And I'll define it recursively. As being first part is just the regular integrand that will diverge once we integrate. Okay, I think that's it. Now I have something open here that I did not close. And I want to close it. Yeah. As most recursive formulas, it takes some time. But what we have is that the prepared integrand is going to be just the integrand. And then there is this sum over the gamma i's. What are the gamma i's? The gamma i's are the one particle with reducible diagrams that are proper diagrams of the Feynman diagram. And what do I mean by that? I mean, if I come back here, this will be one of the gamma i's, let's say. Because this is a subdiagram that is not the whole Feynman diagram, and it is divergent to one loop. And so I have to go and look at all of these subdiagrams and regularize each one by each one, each one with its own regularizer, and then I'll build up. So I go look at, I start with some diagram, some Feynman graph, look at the one loop subdivergences, and I start to regularize them. Then I go up, defining new diagrams, and do that recursively. And I'm going to show an example to. Fix the ideas of what does that mean. Oh, of course, and we don't want any of the want this to be different from the whole Feynman graph. And you want them not to touch each other. So there is a way to rewrite that expression by writing I can write the whole expression in terms of subgraphs that I can build from the original graph by shrinking down the divergences in a described way.
What do you mean by the denominator there? Product over I.
Yes.
Graph.
Sorry.
Okay.
Of course, so there are eyes. Yes. So what I want to do is I want to define a new graph that I'm going to call just basically like a quotient from by the I graph. So I want to look at the new graph, where all the I momentas are internal momentas, and all of the L minus I momentas, which are denoted by prime, are the external momentas. So that's basically what I want to do, like taking that graph and just looking at the subgraph as it its own graph, right?
Hmm.
So, yeah, so I'm going to show you how to do it in a second. I just want to write more expressions. So I can rewrite everything as, you can write a renormalized integrand as being the old integrand plus a sum over the one partial irreducible graphs. That should be a key. This is the prepared graph for the subgraph. So I can just rewrite the same expression, but in this, but now looking at this new graph defined from the old graph by squeezing down the divergence paths. Right? And in the end, if I integrate everything, I'm going to end up with some expression for the amplitude. That's what I wanted. It's the same expression that I had before. It's just rewritten in a different way. Because by the end, we're going to find this thing again when we look at the Hopf algebra structure of the final graphs. So just to have it on the board so you can compare it at the end. Plus some counter terms. Let's just write them like this, because I'm a bit late.
In the very compliant on the top board now.
Yes.
Are you really the one over? Is there a product over I, or is there just one? Is it just?
Is a product.
Yeah. Is there a product in the top line in the denominator?
Yes. Yes. That's a product. That's a big line.
Okay. So it's overall.
It's over all of the subgraphs. You'll see. You'll take a. You pick a graph. Look at all the one particle subgraphs. And you have that product, it's over all the one particle. It's the integrand for all the one particle subgraphs. I'm going to try to give an example. I'm going to give an example now. Let's see if it, because I didn't also understand very well until I started to see what they mean by that new graph. Is this done? So let's go back to six dimensions, and let's look at this graph. Right? Now, if I look at what are the subgraphs that I can get out of this. Well, there is this graph that I get from looking at this part. Right? And then there is the other graph, divergent graphs, right? Because I have this, but this is three level. I care about three level. And then I have another graph coming from cutting this part down. And you can see that those are two one particle reducible graphs, right? So what is the divergence of this one? The superficial divergence is zero. So again, log divergence. And the superficial divergence of this is -2. So we're fine. We don't have to care about it. because it's one loop, and we know that for one loop, that is a good measure of the divergence. Right, so what we have from before, we have a prepared graph that is equal to prepared integrand that is equal to the old integrand minus the Taylor expansion at order 0 because it's just a log. And then I have what I'm calling this graph now gamma, and it's the only gamma that I have. It's the only divergent subgraph of that two-loop amplitude, right? So, but what do I mean by this? Now, this is interesting. Now, by this graph, I mean, it starts with this graph here, and I know that this is the divergent part, right? But I'm taking out the divergent part. So what I'm doing is I'm shrinking down the divergence, and I'm replacing this tree, this loop, by just a tree-level vertex here. So in the end, what I have is just this goes here, then I have this other line that comes down. So I replace everything by just this graph, and then I mean just the integrand for this graph that goes on the other side. Yes.
The sum over gamma I is then a sum over all the possible ways that you can decompose it, so that you satisfy these two conditions?
Yes, that's what I understand. It's all the way that you can decompose your diagram into irreducible and partially irreducible diagrams, such that they do not overlap and they are not the proper graph. And then, of course, and then if you start with three loops, you're going to end up with two loops, and then you're going to do it again in one loop, and you do everything recursively. Now, so that is one example that I want to show is how to do. So that's what we basically do. Because we have that kind of divergence, the loop divergence is for a three-point function, and just shrink down to a three-level vertex. Now, I could also have a diagram like this. And I can look at this and see, well, this is gamma. So what are the one particle reducible diagrams here? Well, it's just this one on top, one on bottom. So what do I do? Well, I'll decompose this, the gamma over area of gamma I. It's just going to be a graph. And but this is the, because what I wanted to say is that actually this is basically the vertex given by the contour term, this vertex here. So I'm substituting the loop by the contour term. And here the same thing. So I substitute this loop by a contour term. I'll have another graph that is going to be the same thing, but going under here. And I have another one. It's going to be just this. And those are the three new graphs that I get from this. And that's how I do. So I start shrinking down, it's basically what we do. We start with a Feynman graph and we add contour terms for each of the divergences that we know. It's just a way to organize these things. Right? Everyone's happy? Okay. Now, I want to move on. Yes, I'm sorry. I used the wrong blackboard. So I'm getting close to the punchline, and now I'm going to talk about how the Feynman graphs have a Hopf algebra structure on them, and from that Hopf algebra structure, we can get those rules for renormalization. So, what is a Hopf algebra? half algebra we saw from the other day is going to be some vector space with a multiplication, some identity, such that this is an algebra. Then I also want a co-product and a co-unit that makes that with H a co-algebra, such that this is an algebra homomorphism or this is a co-algebra homomorphism, so everything works fine. And also an antipode, right? And that gives me the structure of a half algebra as we had seen before. Now, first, what is H? I'll take H to be the space, say, the vector space of Feynman graphs. How do I get it? Well, as I told you before, we can classify our Feynman graphs by the one particle irreducible diagrams. So what I say is that the basis for that space is going to be disjoint unions of one particle irreducible diagrams. So gamma I are one pi diagrams. And then I'll just leave it, and I'll just say that it should take it by faith that this is a vector space, infinite dimensional, and everything else. So we have a linear space. We need a product. So we need something that goes from the tensor product of this to itself. So what do I do? I get one Feynman graph, I get two Feynman graphs, and I say that this is simply the union of the Feynman graphs. This is another Feynman graph. I'm not like restricting to be connected or anything like that. And I also want a unity, an identity, or unit, whatever. So we'll take the one on this field and will give me the identity on the Feynman graphs, which is just the empty graph, because we're using unions as the product, right? And by linearity and everything else, okay, just Q. Okay. I can use the other side.
How are we going to get connected Feynman graphs which have more particle irreducible parts?
I'm taking
union, it means disjoint union. So you get a disconnected diagram already. If you take two basis elements, you get.
No, but you see that the connected diagrams are going to be on the basis elements, right? Because I'm taking this n to be not necessarily finite. It's going to be fine. I don't know the details of how to construct the space, but all the connected diagrams are going to be classified by the one particle irreducible, right?
That's right. In the connected diagram, the one particle irreducible parts are connected by propagators. But
yes.
In what you're saying, they are not connected by anything.
Oh, I see what you mean. Well, I will guess that when you interpret this, when you join together this one particle, you maybe want to join them together by the endpoints of each propagator. But I haven't actually looked very close at how they construct the space. But I understand. I see what you mean. But I can give a vector space structure to the space of Feynman graphs. That is the space of Feynman graphs without any others.
For example, all the examples we have been considering have been one particle irreducible.
Yes.
So
because I want to construct everything by linearity on the one particle irreducible.
Yeah, in a way, when you have two one particular visual things connected.
It's not one piece.
It's, yeah, it's some like a correction to propagate for the settlement.
Yes. Good. Okay, we have a product and we have a unit, a identity. How do you say unit or identity? The U.
Unit.
Not identity. So you need a co-product. So what I'm going to do, the co-product, well, co-product of one, just going to be one plus one. Yeah, and everything I'm defining here is for the basis elements, and then by linearity, we extend them. So here again, I'm using the same notation as before, just to show that. So a coproduct is going to be just some regular thing, and then here I'm just going to multiply the subdiagrams by the diagram where I'm shrinked and substitute with a counter term, basically. So what do I mean? A few fast examples. Just this is just going to be plus one plus this, because it doesn't have any subdivergent diagrams. What about this one? This one again is this plus one plus this. Now two times. This. And then you can keep doing everything.
I'm sorry, one more stupid question. So one point reducible diagrams, are they, is it gamma 1 or gamma I?
Gamma I.
So then I don't understand. But we can carry on.
Why I'm calling?
Because it would make sense if gamma 1 were the one point reducible diagrams, then gamma 2 would be those which can be decomposed into two one point reducible diagrams collected by propagating there, etc. But I'm just. Yeah, I'll read it later.
Yeah, we can also, now I'm wondering how. Because it didn't look very good. But
I'm just wondering how to get those diagrams which are, let's say, connected, but are not one part of the curve. So if you take the gamma as a generator of the algebra, then you can construct arbitrary elements of the algebra by taking linear combinations of products, but the product is a disjoint union, as so you're never going to get anything which is connected but has more one particle.
Ah, no, but that's from the product. If you pick two basis product, if you pick up the product of two basis elements, you mean to generate the rest of the vector space as combinations of when
even an arbitrary.
No, because this is not disjoint, disjoint, right? So
yeah.
I think that's how you get connected, more than one particle per.
Is A supposed to be the space of all particles?
Gamma is supposed to be, yeah, the space of
no,
all
particles. No, but I think probably it's the gamma.
Oh, no, gamma.
Like,
H is
the
space of all Feynman diagrams.
And gamma only has one particle. So what does I mean then? What does it label?
I to label the one particle we're just for diagrams.
We have to.
Oh,
okay. So.
Okay.
Okay.
So okay. I'm just gonna go.
Gamma I is not a set but one graph.
Yes. No. It's a one graph.
Oh. Okay. Okay. Fine. I thought it's a set.
Yes. Yes. I'm just gonna go very fast now. But I'm right at the end. This is done. Okay. We have also a co-unit that is just going to be unit 1. Zero to everything else, an antipode S. That is also defined recursively. So that makes H a commutative of algebra. So very quickly, the punchline. So if I take A row to be the algebra of renormalized amplitudes, then I can consider the space, the homomorphisms, algebra homomorphisms between H and A row. And on this space, I can give a product, convolution product, from the home cross homomorphisms. That I'm going to define as simply this product, and then the punchline is that I can write the renormalized amplitude as being times A, where those two things are part of the of the homomorphism or the space of homomorphisms, and this is actually exactly the B, the PB. Z formula. That gives us, if you open up on all the definitions, it gives you exactly the that. Do I have space here? Let's just do it very quickly. On some graph, this is just going to be the graph, the identity, that's empty graph, plus C of 1, the identity plus A. The graph, schematically, that's where you get, and if you open up the product. So what I wanted to show is basically everything was just to get to this product on the space of regularized amplitudes, which is induced by the half algebra structure on the space of Feynman graphs, and which gives us this BPHZ subtraction formula, which works for any kind of regularization. So you see that the renormalization algorithm, this algorithm for renormalization, is encoded on the half algebra structure of scattering amplitudes. Thank you.
Okay, any questions?
No, no questions. I have a meeting also.
Okay.
Well,
okay.
Any questions, you can talk to me later in the office.
Thank you, and we will maybe discuss via email about the next talk. Okay, bye.